Star jump sequence terminates, Captain.
Get the gravitational dampers online and open the blast shield.
Aye, sir.
Bring us in closer.
Aye, aye, sir. Moving us in on sublight drive.
Extreme magnification.
Aye, sir.
The center of the galaxy. And there's our black hole.
The experience of a lifetime, Captain.
Let me put this on audio. You should be able to hear the magnetic resonance.
This is it, ladies and gentlemen. The edge of time and space, where the impossible can happen. Welcome to the event horizon.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whatever is relevant for the part of the world you are in. Indeed, welcome to the event horizon, where the impossible happens. Join us each week at this time as we delve into the worlds of science fiction, fantasy, and science fact in all their forms. I am your host, Gene Turnbow. With me is co-host, comic book expert, futurist, and my associate editor on sci-fi.radio, Thaddeus Howes. The Answer Man, Thaddeus Howes. And our guest today is Jordan Clark. And Thaddeus, I'm going to let you introduce Jordan.
You're going to let me introduce Jordan? Hey, how about we make it easy? Jordan, how about you introduce yourself? Tell us what makes you, you.
Well, I am Jordan Clark. I am a comic book writer. I live in Baltimore, Maryland. I've been writing comics for 12, 13 years now. I've worked at a lot of different companies. I've worked for DC Comics, IDW Comics, Dynamite Comics, Image Comics. I've done a lot of myself, published comics on my own. And now I have my own creator-owned debut comic from Ahoy, which is called Ancestral Recall. So that's coming out this August. I'm excited to be here and talk with you guys.
I saw the cover art. It looks fantastic.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, the book is the cover is attractive. But I like both of the covers, actually.
Yeah.
You had another cover done, a secondary cover or a B cover done, and I like mm-hmm. that. That cover was also very nice. So, yeah, it looks like you've got a good product there.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been lucky enough to have a lot of great artists working with us. Adigan Alhan is my co-creator, series artist. He also did all the A covers for the book. And then for this first issue, we have a cover by Kari Randolph, who is just like one of the premier talents working in comics. So we were very lucky to get him to come on with us too.
Yeah. When I saw the name, I was like, oh, quite off. We're moving up in the world, sir. We're getting the grade A talent. Very good.
Yep.
And you guys are all grade A talent too, because I know you work for Milestone, Milestone Initiative. How do you feel about that? Tell me about that.
That was an amazing experience, I think, just for me specifically. Like, Milestone is a very meaningful brand, a very meaningful publisher. For people who don't know, it was first started in the 90s by just a ton of the best Black comic book creators. That was Dwayne McDuffie, that was Dennis Cohen, and a bunch of others who we're working for Marvel and working for DC, and we're having, you know, success there, but we're also seeing that a lot of the stories that they wanted to tell, A, weren't getting told, B, you know, a lot of the ideas that they had just weren't, you know, ready to be accepted, at least, you know, by the major publishers. And so they took a really big risk and said, we're just going to go our own way. We're going to leave Marvel. We're going to leave DC. We're going to start our own comic book publisher. We're going to make a whole universe of Black superheroes, Black stories. And we're going to bet on ourselves that, you know, the audience is going to be there and that people are going to want to read these. And not only was it a runaway success, it was such a success that DC said, well, wait a minute. Can we have
of
some of that too? And so, you know, Milestone has been around for a while, but, you know, unfortunately, you know, Dwayne McDuffie passed away a number of years ago, and, you know, just a lot of life things, you know, happens with the creators and the owners of it. But they were able to bring it back in a number of ways recently, and one of those ways being the Milestone Initiative, where they took myself and a number of other very talented artists and writers of color and, you know, varying backgrounds, and, you know, gave us an opportunity not just to be in you know, milestone to work on these characters, but also to kind of give us some experience working at this level, you know, and like getting to talk to Reggie and getting to talk to Dennis is not only just a very entertaining time. They have so many stories from just all of their years working in comics, but they're also very giving, and they also really, really, really want us to be successful, for Milestone to be successful, because I think they know just the power and the importance that it holds, you know, within the comic book industry and to so many readers. And so, you know, for me, just getting a chance to sit under them, to hear stories from them, to learn from them, to learn from, you know, a lot of other great legendary creators. We had mentors. Mine was Dan Jurgens, which was crazy to be able to just like talk to him and hear his stories as well. And, you know, we got to work on some stories for Milestone, you know, and afterwards, so many of us have been able to keep our careers, you know, ascending. So, you know, some of us are working for Marvel now. Some of us are working for DC now, have had some projects come out from them. Some of us are doing our own, you know, individual creator-owned work. And so I think the program was successful, but it was also just, you know, for me personally, being able to just say I touched Milestone briefly, had a brush with, you know, a lot of these legendary figures and got to work on some of these characters is a real honor for me.
I think it's more than that. I think Milestone wasn't just a cultural event. I think it's a state of mind. And you are so lucky to have been brought into that fold.
Yeah.
And to be able to contribute it to it in such a significant way now with this new book that's really something. You have to respect that. That's really something.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this book. Oh, go ahead, Thaddeus.
No, go on. I was just going to ready to start on that. I was going to say, hey, let's talk about Ancestral Recall. What drove you from the Milestone Initiative to this book?
I was going to say, I mean, to me, this feels like, you know, if I had a chance to do, you know, some Milestone work, like this is kind of the vibe that I would be going for. And it's funny enough that not only were me and Adigan both part of the Milestone program, but basically the genesis for Melvin came from a character creation workshop we did when we went to the DC headquarters. And so, you know, they had us make a hero and they had us make a villain. And we were broken up into teams. And so we had to choose one from each of the teams. So like they chose my villain. But, you know, luckily that means for me that Melvin got to kind of live on and gestate, and I got to kind of keep playing around with the concepts and the ideas. And so, you know, I feel like, you know, if it wasn't for that opportunity in that program, I wouldn't have, you know, this book, because it feels like, you know, in so many ways, you know, all of the things that I was thinking about and experiencing, you know, over those couple of months, again, having the contact and being able to speak with all of these people, but also, you know, being able to think about, you know, the Milestone universe and what it brought to the comic book landscape. I think that just kind of was a worm in my brain that, you know, kept turning around, and I was able to take that and turn it into this.
Well, I felt like when I was reading it, the bit I got to read, it had a very Milestone vibe. It had I felt like I was around when Milestone first came out. Yeah, I'm that old. And so I read the first Milestones, and I remember just the vibe, the feeling I got. It was the first time I think I read a comic where I didn't feel like we were tacked on, connected in a bolted on way, you know, as a black guy in the story. And yeah, we bolted him on the back end of the story, and yeah, he'll do something, you know, pivotal once.
Oh, and we're going to put all these black in his name so that you can't miss it. You know,
right.
It's like, what the.
So it was really nice when Milestone came into being. And, you know, I know Milestone's, you know, its greatest child was Static. And you know, Static managed to not only excel in the comic, but he eventually even got his own little TV show, which was also a legendary kind of thing in its day. Mm-hmm. And it became the truth that you and I probably always knew, that black characters could exist. They could be good. They could have meaningful stories. They have families. They exist. And it was really weird because our culture, if you're a comic reader, that hadn't been our experience. You know, we get one black hero. We get one black hero. He gets to be a caricature. Or he gets to be a stereotype. And I'm talking about Luke Cage. You know, Luke Cage.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was the only real successful black hero from Marvel for a very long time. DC barely ever managed to get anybody on the grid that stayed there. Black Lightning came and went, periodically, and only recently has he had a chance to really exist when he became a TV show again, and now he exists in the comics again. And so, you know, for the most part, I always felt like we were bolted on. So Milestone was a breath of fresh air. It just, I felt welcome in it. I felt welcome in that universe. We weren't presented stereotypically. We were allowed to be as a variety of ways of being: smart, capable, intelligent, detached, cool, exciting, hot-headed. Milestone was all of that and then some. So when I'm reading your book, what I liked about it, the thing I liked best about the main character Melvin was he was not young. He was not young. He was not high-strung. He was not. He was private.
It didn't have to be a coming-of-age story.
Yeah,
It didn't have to be a coming-of-age story,
and I like that best about it. Was that Melvin has already arrived. He is doing his thing. He has a beautiful wife who is actually running his business because he's just doing the art. She is running the business, and he likes it that way. He likes just doing his art. And I felt that was really important when we were, you know, reading this, we were feeling this. And I like that. I like the very nature of it. So now my question for you was, how did you decide that what you wanted to do was channel history into superpowers? I need to know that because I'm a Ben 10 guy. And so, you know, I loved Ben 10. And so the idea of channeling superpowers through alternate forms seems reasonable. But what you did was a step above that. You said, I'm going to take Ancestral Recall, the Akashic Records, the idea that we have a connection to the past, and make it real. Why did you decide to do that?
I think there are a number of things that, again, you know, my time working in the Milestone program were kind of rattling around my brain. One of them was, at the time, Everything Everywhere All at Once had just come out. And, you know, that was a movie that, again, kind of tapped into the idea of, you know, what if you got to live not just multiple lives, but, like, you know, the multiple possibilities of what you could be. You know, you could be anything from, you know, the big success in the universe to twirling a hot dog sandwich on the side of, you know, a street to, you know, like, whatever. Like, life has so many ranges and possibilities. You know, it was a big story. It was a funny story, but it was also a very heartful story. It was a story about generational trauma. It was a story about, you know, this family that was trying to figure out how do we connect, you know, through an immigrant experience, through, you know, trying to figure out what makes us who we are and how we move through the world. And a lot of that was, you know, cultural, and a lot of that was trying to maintain and hold on to that culture as you kind of assimilate into, you know, the American, you know, society and system. And so, I think for me, you know, getting the chance to do a project of my own, you know, I really wanted to take a big swing, and I was inspired by just, like, man, they were not afraid to do anything and everything and just throw it all against the wall and, like, see what stuck. And when I was thinking about Melvin's power sets, you know, one of the things that I was really inspired by is kind of what you were talking about, that is just the idea of, like, you know, Black history and Black culture is something where, even if it's not my family, you know, it's not somebody that I'm directly descended from, they do feel connected to me in a lot of ways. When I read James Baldwin, I feel connected to that. When I listen to, you know, Sun Ra and all of these jazz artists, I feel connected to that. When I, you know, hear Billie Holiday sing, I feel connected to that. When I watch, you know, a lot of the great Black actors act, or, you know, like anything like that, like, there's a connection to me. And, you know, they may not be me, like, my literal, you know, flesh and blood, but they are me, you know, in the ways that they've existed in the world. And specifically thinking about just the generations of people who lived for me to be here, you know, like, there is just kind of a being on the shoulders of giants, right? And it's not necessarily just the, yes, you know, you've got the Harriet Tubmans and the Rosa Parks and, like, these very incredible figures, but then you got people who just lived, right? Like, people lived full lives, you know what I mean, through all these times, through, you know, many times where they were being oppressed, and yet they still found joy, they still found happiness, they still found community, they still found a way to pass down their stories through the generations. And even if you go to your own family tree and you think about you know, grandparents or cousins or, you know, people like that, I mean, every family has incredible stories of people who did incredible things. And so I wanted to tap into what that meant. And so having Melvin be somebody who has this connection to Black history, again, not just in a superficial way where it's like, you know, what if you could do this or that, you know, in terms of, you know, these very well-known Black figures, but like being able to tap into people who are lesser known, you know, just in the history books, you know, in just, you know, public consciousness, but also doing it in a way where it doesn't feel like, you know, I'm kind of beating you over the head with, you know, these historical lessons, but more so like it is a constant flow, you know, of time where every person that Melvin meets, you know, it's just not like, wow, you know, who are you? It's just like, I know you, you know, I know you in a way. I think about, you know, the way that Toni Morrison would speak about knowing, you know, it's just, it's instinctual. It kind of just is, you know, the way that people will say, oh, you know, you laugh just like, you know, cousin, you know, Joe, or like you look just like, you know, your Aunt Isabel, or, you know, like you move in a way that reminds me of these people. And it's like, it's not intentional. It's not like something that you're channeling, you know, for a purpose. It's just you. It's just in you. And so, you know, for Melvin, it's just in him. It's just something that he's able to tap into and connect to. And so I really wanted to have that be the crux of where he gets his power from, is he gets his power and he gets his abilities from, you know, this long line of people who sacrificed, sure, but also, you know, empowered themselves and empowered the people around them. And that power is something that we can all draw from, you know, even if it's not, you know, a superpower, but it's still a power and an ability that I feel like we all have, you know, that we can tap into.
Why did you make him an abstract painter? I'm curious. I know that wasn't an accident. Why?
Yeah. One of the big influences for Melvin was the Nolinus Monk and his wife, Nellie Monk. And so I wanted to, you know, find an art, you know, that he could be, you know, participating in. If he was just another like musician, like I didn't want it to be super on the nose. But I also think a lot about the ways that Black art is interpreted, one, through multiple lenses, right? Like I think there is always that idea of a double consciousness, you know, for every Black artist, where you're kind of looking at, I'm making this, you know, with intention for me, but then, you know, the dominant prism, you know, is the white lens, and then, you know, it filters down through, you know, the Black lens, and then, you know, you're kind of looking back in on yourself. And like specifically the higher up you get, I mean, you think about, you know, people like Basquiat, you know, like he was in predominantly white spaces, constantly having to explain his art to predominantly white critics, and always kind of banging his head against the wall, because like sometimes it's just a picture. Sometimes I just made something, you know what I mean? And I guess in a sense it is Black art because it came from me. But, you know, not everything is, you know, has the utmost meaning, but sometimes it does, right? And sometimes it's not something that I feel like I should have to explain. I just made it, you know what I mean? And like if you connect to it and you see it and you know it, then you're able to kind of appreciate it and interpret it on a different level. And so for Melvin, so much of his life and his work, I think of him as somebody, like you were saying, Thaddeus, like he just loves the work, you know, in the same way that Thelonious Monk just wanted to play the music. You know, he didn't want to do the business. He didn't want to do the interviews. He didn't want to have to deal with, you know, all of this extracurricular stuff. He just wanted to do the music and be the music. And I think that's a lot of Melvin's perspective, is I just want to create, you know, whatever it is that's coming to me. And so, you know, abstract painting, I think, is something that has enough level of interpretation that you can be kind of obtuse with it, but still have, you know, that meaning and intention to it. And, you know, as far as, you know, the world of I guess you can call it high arts is concerned, you know, that you don't really see too many Black people in that space, at least not, you know, in a way that is celebrated. You know what I mean? Like, there are tons of abstract Black artists, but not all of them get to exist, you know, in these very celebrated spaces, to be in these celebrated museums or these curated collections. And so for Melvin to be somebody who kind of existed in that space, I thought would be very interesting.
It is the role of every artist and creator to say, I see you, I hear you, I feel you. That seems to be the underpinnings of what you just said.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have another question for you now.
Mm-hmm.
In the story right now, or in your notes, you mentioned that you were going to be featuring lesser known, but not necessarily unknown, famous individuals. Did you get a list? Did you just decide, I'm going to put these people in, or were they chosen because they had a narrative structure that you could benefit from? I mean, what was your criteria for picking them?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of both, because, you know, obviously, it's a visual medium, it's a storytelling medium. And so, like, there needs to be action, there needs to be things that are happening on the page. And so I wanted to find characters that I could use in a dynamic way. While at the same time, you know, like you were saying, not necessarily just going for the first person who came up on the Google search, you know, like I wanted to do a little bit deeper of a look to find people that, again, like, you're never going to really read about them in a history book, just because, you know, the people who write history are the ones who decide what is important, and as opposed to, like, what, you know, other people might deem to be important. So, for example, there's a woman, Marie Van Britten Brown, who invented what we know as the modern security system. And she did it basically out of necessity, because she needed to protect her home. The police were not protecting her home. And so she, you know, put a camera, you know, in the door that kind of slid up and down, and she, you know, set up these alarms and all this stuff. And she was just a nurse. Like, she wasn't an electrician or, you know, somebody. Like, she just figured out how to do it, because she had to do it, you know. And so there's all of these stories throughout history of these people who have, you know, very wide-ranging skills and knowledge bases. You know, later on, Melvin runs into Bill Pickett, who was, like, the first famous Black rodeo cowboy, and, you know, a couple other people like that, who I think, one, would be of a lot of interest for people. You know, you come across the name, or you see, you know, a bit of the story, and you say, well, I kind of want to know more about that. Like, who is that guy? Like, that's very interesting, you know, to kind of see somebody doing things. Because I think, you know, it's always interesting when you hear about the first, right? And, like, even in 2025, there's the first Black person to, you know, whatever. And you're just like, wow, like, still? Like, that's crazy.
See, I say the same thing. It's like, really? Are we still having to say the first in 2025? The first? Really? I'm always away when I see that. It just blows my mind.
Yeah, but I mean, But there's also pioneers, you know, from way back in the day, where you're just like, you wouldn't know that, you know, we were doing those things or involved in those things. But, you know, like, we're everywhere. We're part of this country since we were brought to this country. And, like, we do everything that everybody else does. So if you can think of a thing that exists, we've done it in some way, shape, or form. And so, like, I think it's always interesting to kind of go through history to see, you know, just how we lived and the kind of ways that we were able to influence culture.
Not to mention the innovation and the fact that brilliance crosses all the boundaries, and very frequently it's going to be a Black man doing it the first time, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well,
that happens more than people with my skin color like to think about. You know, it just doesn't occur to us, because we have this myopia, you know. So
history belongs to the people who write it. So
exactly,
if they're writing it, we aren't in it. So, like, when I saw your choice for Jean-Louis Michel, the swordsman, I was like, magnifique, because I actually knew that one. That was not a surprise to me. Yeah, well, I do wargaming and role-playing games.
Okay.
So I have an adjacency to, you know, legendary heroes, because we like to, I try to squeeze them into my own writing or my own gaming stuff. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, good choice. Good choice.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was nice. But I did not know about Charlotte Glass, for example.
Yeah.
So that was new, and that was nice. And I did a little research. I was like, oh, look at this. This woman was pretty amazing. And just if this is the caliber of people you're bringing, I'm like, I can't wait to see who else is showing up, because it looks like it's going to be extraordinary.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for me, that's one of my biggest hopes, is that as people read the series and they go along, you know, they are intrigued and they want to look up these people and kind of learn more about this history, just because, you know, obviously if we could, we would, you know, fit the whole biography in the back of the book and you could, you know, read all about it, but we only have so many pages and so much space to kind of tell the story. And so, you know, it is nice to have that encouragement to go and look, because, you know, I love history, and so it's not anything for me to sit down and read a book or, you know, like watch a documentary or go through things. But I know, you know, there's a lot of people who
we're talking about Melvin and June, their relationship, and part of the question I have for you was, again, so you chose them, they were older, and I know there was a reason for that. Because normally in science fiction and comics and storytelling, we tend to skew younger. And the fact that you didn't, that was kind of, I have to admit, extra appealing. I I mean, yes, okay, I'm a little older, but it was nice to see it wasn't going to just be this story of young people doing young people things. And you know, it's one of the reasons I think Hollywood and I have fallen out, because they seem to act like if you're not 25, you don't exist anymore. No one over 25 can save the day. And it feels problematic to me. I try not to take it personally, but I think that's why Everywhere All at Once was good to me, because I felt like the characters were older. They felt like they were lived in. And the writers made it feel that age was important, that experience was important. And I'm hoping that we're going to see the same thing for Melvin and June, that their being older people won't make them less capable. It will make them more capable, because I feel like that's really the truth.
Yeah. Well, and for me, you know, one of the big inspirations was, you know, the actor Michael Clay Williams, who unfortunately passed away, you know, a couple of years ago. But listening to some of the interviews he did, you know, right before he passed, he was talking about, you know, the way that he approaches his work and the way that he approaches his roles is with an eye for, you know, characters that don't get to be seen, you know, that often, but that he knows, you know, these are people that he grew up with in his neighborhood, or people that, you know, he has, you know, come across just in his life, you know, whether it's as an actor or just as a person, that deserve to have their stories told as well. And, you know, the more that we are able to kind of expand outside of just the normal, you know, like you're saying, the Hollywood route of just like, this is what a leading man is, this is what a leading woman is, this are the stories that we want to tell, or the only stories that are important, as opposed to kind of, you know, giving a broad spectrum and a broad range of perspective. Because, you know, in the Black community, like, elders hold, you know, a real importance, and like being able to tell the story of, you know, not just a couple that has, you know, been married for a long time, has lived together for a long time, but also, you know, just generally in this country, there is a quick, you know, look to kind of displace or, you know, push to the side, you know, older people, specifically once you've retired. It's just kind of like, great, get out the way. Yeah. You know, and it's like, you know, so many people not only just want to continue to work, and not necessarily even work, you know, in the sense of like the job or the career that they had, but just like the value and the importance of being, you know, in community and being seen, and feeling like you're contributing to something. Like, again, you've lived a life and you've earned, you know, the ability to just sit on a beach and, you know, not, if that's what you want to do. But I also feel like it's refreshing and it's different to kind of have that perspective of people who, you know, once you've lived and, you know, have kind of seen so many things in your life, like, what is it that really matters to you? What is it that you really hold dear to you, specifically, you know, not in a morbid sense of like, you know, the best years are behind you, but more so in the sense of like, you know, when you look back, you're in a stage where you're starting to get a little bit more reflective of, you know, what you've done and what you've accomplished. You know, you're thinking about, you know, I know I'm, you know, even at my age, you know, I'm definitely a bit on the younger side, you know.
What?
I'm feeling,
what are you, don't even go there. What are you, 25? Well, give me a break.
36, you know, so I'm.
Wow. Get this guy a seeing eye dog right away. 36.
But, you know, I feel
you know
like.
What I would do to be 36 right now? I'd do a lot of coming off.
But even I kind of feel like, oh, man, you know, like what have I done, you know, so far in my life? And I feel like so much of how we place value upon ourselves, you know, whether it's from, you know, just a capitalist side or from just the way that, you know, society kind of places those pressures on you. It's like, well, you know, did you have a family, or, you know, how much money do you have, or do you own a house, or do you, you know, all of these things. And, you know, but like, what is it that matters, you know, when all of that's gone, you know, and like, did you contribute to something, you know, bigger than yourself? Were you able to, you know, connect, you know, in a way that, you know, the people around you felt like their lives were better, you know, that you improved, you know, other people's lives, or just, we're just kind, you know, like, I'm a big Kurt Vonnegut fan. And, you know, God damn it, baby, you just gotta be kind, right? Like that's it. And so, I think for Melvin and June, you know, I really wanted to capture a couple that, you know, was settled and had, you know, a lot of, you know, what they liked, you know, kind of just set out in front of them, totally disrupt that, you know, and kind of see what it would look like and what they would do, you know, to kind of get back to each other.
I think that was the really, and that was the energy I got from it. I really liked that. That was, to me, that meant a lot. I appreciated that when I first saw it.
You have been listening to episode 286 of Sci-Fi.Radio's production of The Event Horizon for June 14th, 2025. Our guest this evening has been Jordan Clark, writer and co-creator of the new comic book series from Ahoy Comics, Ancestral Recall. This show will air again tomorrow, June 15th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and again on the upcoming Thursday and Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Eastern. After all of the airtimes have passed, you will find this episode and others on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbay FM, Pandora, Stitcher, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and on our own website at sci-fi.radio. If you enjoyed the programming you have just heard, please consider visiting patreon.com/sci-fi radio and becoming a patron of the station. We are listener-supported sci-fi and fantasy fandom radio, and your contributions go to paying our DJs, our production team, the writers for our Geek News website, our business operation fees, our music licensing, and they help us procure and maintain the equipment and other resources we need to stay on the air. We have been broadcasting continuously since 2009, and we are thankful for the support of listeners just like you. That URL is, again, patreon.com/sci-fi radio. This episode is copyright 2025 by Krypton Media Group Incorporated. The Event Horizon on sci-fi.radio. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.